I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. My voice is crap right now. His name is John Onelio. His voice is pretty good, although he never really sings for us anymore. And you're listening to The Functional Nerds. This is episode number 226 with Mr. Jamie Todd Rubin.
Hey, that is Patrick Hester. I am John Onelio, and Jamie Todd Rubin is with us today. Patrick Hester is an author, a blogger, and a podcast dude for the SF Signal podcast. He's won a couple of Hugos for that as well. You can check out his website, atfmv.com, and follow him on Twitter at atfmv. My name is John Onelio. I am a musician and a podcaster, and you can check out our website, functionalnerds.com. You can follow me on Twitter at John Onelio. And we are joined by Jamie Todd Rubin today. Jamie is a science fiction writer and a blogger and a productivity expert, and I'd like to talk to him about all those things today. And he's got stories in lots of different cool publications. And Jamie, thanks for coming on today.
Well, thank you guys for having me. This is exciting. I always get ramped up when I do one of these things, and it's like the, you know, the energy and the nerves, and it's like getting up on stage. So thanks for having me.
John, oh, you're welcome. John, before you go too far into this, when was Capricorn?
It was about a month ago now, I guess.
Okay.
A month ago.
And John Ekus was the one who invited us.
Yes.
And so therefore, through the logic of all things, he's responsible for this shit going on in my body right now.
Yes.
A month later.
Yes. But Jamie, you are
John
one of
doesn't
the people.
John doesn't want to play. He wants to talk to Jamie.
I don't want to.
Hi, Jamie. How's it going?
Hi, Jamie.
It's going
Jamie
well.
Jamie's one of the people that probably a list of about 10 people that I'm positive have been on the show before that have not been on the show before, just because they're people that we're friends with online and in person. Jamie and I have met in person once before, too, at Balticon, had a beer at Balticon together, and I know Patrick has met Jamie in person, and I just always assume Jamie was on the show, and it's one of those things like, huh. Never been on the show.
He's been on SF Signal quite a bit.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, too. I think our things get blended sometimes. People get confused who's on what. So I wanted to have
Third
Jamie
base.
On the show. Yes, Jamie on the show today. And you can check out Jamie's blog. It's JamieRubin, RUBIN.net. And you can follow him on Twitter at JamieTR. And he's quite a prolific blogger. Writes really, really interesting blogs about a number of different things. A lot of them have to do with productivity and organization and sort of his writing schedule. And there's also stuff I'd like to get into with him today.
You know that he writes all this great science fiction, but just like I do, but everybody knows him for the software that he uses, just like me.
He's world famous for Evernote. Yeah. So there's all sorts of stuff that I'd like to get into with Jamie today. Jamie, maybe you can list, because I know you've had lots of stories published. Where can people find some of your stories? I know they're in several different magazines and anthologies and things like that.
Are any of them in anthologies with Bob Silverberg?
Yes. My most recent story, it's called Meet and Greet, M-E-A-T. And that is in the current issue of Intergalactic Medicine Show. It's the only remotely zombie story that I've ever written, and it's really, really short. And I've had stories in a couple of anthologies, including Beyond the Sun, and then in Analog and Daily Science Fiction and Apex, and I'm sure I'm forgetting some others. But yeah, so it's sort of a kind of a little bit all over the place, and I kind of like that because it's just, you know, to get some diversity into where you're selling things.
Are they hard sci-fi, regular sci-fi, space opera sci-fi, sci-fi fantasy, sci-fi non-fantasy, sci-fi with a little fantasy, sci-fi cooking?
I rarely write hard science fiction. The stories that I've had in Analog, there's maybe a paragraph, really just one paragraph of what I would consider hard science fiction. And I guess it was enough to get me in the door. But otherwise it's a pretty broad mix. And one thing I've noticed recently is that I'm writing more and more mainstream stories with just a touch of either science fiction or fantasy or something like that in them. I've been writing, I've written like a, I'm on my third now, baseball story. And all three stories I've written do have elements of science fiction. One of them was published in Intergalactic Medicine Show last year, Big Al Shepard Plays Baseball on the Moon. But they're getting much more mainstream, modern day stories with like a little wrinkle of something in it that makes it, you know, science fiction or fantasy or something. So I don't know why that's happening. It's just the way the stories are going.
Well, and it's strange that you would write stories about baseball, considering that you don't know anything at all about baseball. You're not really a baseball fan.
You want to write things about things that you've never done before.
Now, let me ask this question before we move on with that, because we, as longtime listeners of this show know, we have a video monitor so we can all see each other, even though we don't ever post it. Maybe that's something we'll do in the future, is like post YouTube video so you can see Patrick and I on like Saturday mornings all groggy. And
I'll have to comb my hair.
Yeah, we'll have to have, you know,
put on a shirt.
Start a shower policy then. But we're looking at Jamie now, and he is wearing a New York Yankees T-shirt. And now you're in Virginia?
I am.
Why are you wearing a New York Yankees shirt?
I'm from New York. I'm originally from New York. My grandfather and his brothers had a service station on the Grand Concourse in the Bronx right across the park from Yankee Stadium for 30 years. And I was born a Yankees fan into a family of Mets fans, so I like to say that I'm the only normal one. That's just, I've always been a Yankees fan.
Take me out to the ball game.
Now, do you go to Orioles games to see when the Yankees are in town?
When I lived in Maryland, I had season tickets. For 5 years, I had season tickets to the Orioles. My dad would fly out every once in a while to go to a game. I had the every Sunday game, basically. And so I mainly got them to see the Yankees, because the Yankees would come in two or three Sundays a season.
Right.
And see them. And I love that. That's a great stadium. I really love that stadium.
See, I prefer AAA. And you know why? Because number one, I feel like they give a shit, because they're trying really, really hard to get to the show. And number two, you can buy season tickets for AAA ball for the price of a hot dog at a regular season game.
Well, I actually do like minor league baseball, and I try to get to games. In fact, my son is starting his second year. Well, he played fall ball. He's starting spring ball now, and he's six, or he's going to be six in June. And he was kind of at the point where if he got out, he'd get upset and he'd be sad. And what I told him was like, look, everybody gets out at some point. And I thought taking him to a minor league game would be great, because he'll actually see players make mistakes, and you'll see it pretty frequently. And I think that's really good, because you kind of see like, hey, it's okay. That happens. That's how you learn. You make that mistake, and then you figure out why you made it, and then you try not to make it again.
Yeah, I went to you don't realize how good major leaguers are and how few mistakes they actually make until you go to a minor league, or by me, there's an independent league. It's the Somerset Patriots in Somerset, New Jersey, and the Newark Bears. Those are like the two teams in this independent league. And they, we saw them, and they would get like sort of guys that were in and out of the minors, and they would also get sort of washed up major leaguers who were trying like one last run at the show. So they were in New Jersey because a lot of the scouting's there. So the one game we went to there, it was a couple years ago now, probably almost 10 years ago now, and it was, I believe, Jose Canseco. What's Jose Canseco's brother? Is it Ozzy Canseco?
Oh yeah,
I think both Cansecos were playing. Who? I think Ricky Henderson might have been there too. Like he was trying one last run.
Yeah, he did that for a while, and it kept pushing back his ability to get into the Hall of Fame because he kept doing that.
Was Peyton Manning there?
No Peyton Manning. I want to say like Jim Leyritz. Okay. I think he was there at the time. So these were like all major leaguers who were trying one last stop.
Yeah, I had no idea there was minor league teams in Somerset, and the only reason I mentioned that is because from late 1972 to late 1979, I lived in Somerset, New Jersey.
Oh, okay. Well, it's a new-ish, like I said, it was about 10 years ago that I went. It's an independent league. It's not part of Major League Baseball.
Sure.
It's another professional baseball league that, and again, it's not. I don't even think it's as good as regular minor leagues because there are, it's younger guys that are not quite good enough to be in the minor leagues,
yeah.
And it's older guys that are not good enough to be in there. But I mean, they're there. It's like another breeding ground, so that way teams don't have to sign guys, and if they need a little extra help, you know, towards the end of the season, and you know, an extra bat, and it's like, well, Ricky Henderson's there, we can sign him to a 6-week contract or something. You know, it's a way that the Ricky Hendersons of the world can still kind of be out there doing their thing. But yeah, it's fun. But boy, what a shit show that was in terms of like errors. And it's like,
oh, yeah.
It gets boring after a while because it's like, oh my God, this guy just walks three guys in a row. You never see that in the major leagues, like all these like walks in a row and all sorts of crazy stuff. But anyway, okay, well, let's move on to our picks of the week then.
Picks of the week.
And Jamie, why don't you go first with your pick?
Okay, well, I picked I have not been reading inside the genre for a while, not for any reason other than I've just been reading a lot of nonfiction and other stuff. So what I picked today was an album. And a friend of mine, a coworker I've worked with a long time, him and his brother have put out quite a few albums of a band called the Shimshaws. And they have a new album out called Everything Always. And it's sort of like guitar-driven pop rock stuff. They do videos, and they've done shows before. And there's a couple really good singles on the album, Different Places and Sideways. And you can find them at Shimshaws, Shimshaws.com, and at The Shimshaws on Twitter. And if you like just energetic music, energetic rock pop stuff, it's a lot of fun.
Cool, very good. I've been reading up a storm lately, so I'm gonna have a book pick, and I think I'm gonna throw a music pick in there too. I'm gonna cheat and do two picks this week. I'll do my music pick first on the heels of Jamie's. It is an album. The name of the group is the Revolution Saints, and this is from my favorite record label. It's called Frontiers Record. They're out of Italy. I think it's just this Italian dude that has a lot of money, and he just signs. He puts these sort of like 80s rock supergroups together. That's like 70% of what his label puts out. He puts like other band stuffs out too that are sort of in that style, but he'll sort of combine the guitar player from one band and the bass player from another band and the drummer from another band, and they put an album out basically. So the Revolution Saints it's Doug Aldrich, who is the guitar player from Whitesnake. It is Jack Blades, who is the singer and bass player from Night Ranger. And it is Dean Castronovo, who is the drummer from Journey, but he's not only playing drums on this, he's singing lead. And he's got an amazing voice, and it sounds remarkably like Steve Perry from Journey. So it's sort of like a little more rockin' version of Journey. It's a little ballad heavy for my taste, but like the rockers on it are really good, and the songs are really good. So if you like that sort of Journey, if you like something that would combine Journey, Night Ranger, and Whitesnake, if that's something that doesn't make you shriek in horror, then you'll enjoy this album very much. It's called Revolution Saints.
Is that the album name or the band name?
It's both.
Okay.
It's the album and the band name. Half of the albums that this label puts out, I think that's the case where the album name and the band name are the same, because quite frequently these are just like projects. They're like sort of one and that's it, and then they move on to the next project. So usually that is the case, but it's very good, and they have a bunch of videos on YouTube. When they record these albums, I think while they're in the studio, they make a bunch of videos while they're there too, so you can YouTube that and find a couple cool videos. So and I'll just do a music pick. I'll let Patrick go on there.
Oh, my pick this week is going to be Fall Back, because Fall Back is obviously the better of the two bullshit daylight savings times things. Spring Forward sucks. And my body still, weeks after Spring Forward, is still going, no, you're not getting up right now. It's 6 o'clock in the morning. And the clock is going, No, it's not. It's 7. Get up now. And my body's going, but there's no sunlight. We don't get up when there's no sunlight. So fall back, much better than spring forward.
I will agree. I'm gonna back up your pick, Patrick, and I think it's interesting that you pick that this week, because you know I did want to talk to Jamie about some of his productivity things, and you know I've developed quite a morning routine where I get up very early and make my breakfast, and I do some journal writing and some reading and all that, and yeah, that spring ahead screwed me up big time, because it basically you know. Was putting me to bed an hour later, and I get up so early to begin with. It really wasn't until...
I've been going to bed early. Because they say, go to bed early, right? And then your body will adjust. Bullshit.
Yeah, it takes a couple weeks. It really wasn't until Friday that I actually felt okay this week. That I feel like I've been off all the week. And as I'm sure most of the rest of the country has been as well. So it's, I hate it. Well, you know, that leads us into talking a little bit about that sort of thing with Jamie. A lot of his blogs are about making the most use of your time. I think that's what it really comes down to.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Well, and it's not like Jamie. I mean, Jamie has plenty of free time. You know, he's got kids, he's got the wife, he's got all the writing stuff. I mean, he's got plenty of free time, so it's not like he really needs to organize better.
Mm-hmm. And I am sort of, because I'm in a similar position as Jamie. Like, I have a full-time job, I have a family, and I have lots of things that I want to do. And it's I've just learned that there are certain things that I do, and I'm kind of always on the lookout for other ways to sort of maximize my time. And I think Jamie writes a lot of very good posts about how to do that. So, Jamie, maybe before we get into anything else, I think this is a good question to ask, is can you maybe outline what the first couple hours of your day is like? Do you have a specific morning routine that you follow every day?
Generally, yes, but it's probably not anything to do with productivity. I mean, with the kids and work and stuff, my days usually start at 6, and and it's usually me getting the kids dressed and getting them their breakfast while my wife gets ready for work. And then once we're all ready, we're out the door at 7. We drop the kids off at school, and then we both go into the office until, you know, 4 or 5, whatever, in the evening. And then it's kind of the reverse, pick them up on the way home and get dinner and all that. So one thing that has really helped me in the last 2 years, I think, was figuring out, and I think it's probably different for everybody, and I generally sort of talk about this stuff, even on the blog, is this is how I do it, not this is how you should do it, because I kind of feel like everybody's situation is different. But what I found was that I did try things in the past, like coming up with a routine. I'll get up a little earlier. I'll write for an hour. I'll, you know, do whatever, you know, things that I want to try to do to carve out more time in the day. And I'd be successful at it for a while. But eventually, you know, you get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and try to write for a couple of hours before everybody wakes up, and you're just going to be wiped out. There's going to be a morning where you say, no, I'm not going to do it this morning. And once that happens, at least with me, it's sort of like it screws up my whole day because I feel bad for not doing it. So a couple of years ago, I sort of decided I'm going to try something different, which is I'm going to try to write every day, but not worry about when or how much. Just that I need to do it every day. And I had a lot of preconceived notions that I had to challenge with that. You know, not a set time of day, not a set amount of time, not a set word count. I used to think I needed silence to write in. And I end up learning I could write, you know, sitting in a room with a TV on and my kids screaming in the background. So that was a big eye-opener for me, and it's been extremely successful. Some days I only write for 10 minutes. Other days I'll write for 3 hours, probably averages about 40 minutes over the last 2 years. But I haven't missed a day in 601 days now. So
I saw that you just wrote a blog post about how you had that streak that you have going now. Another sort of comparison to baseball, as we were talking, you know, you're getting a lot of Cal Ripken-esque streaks going.
With
your writing. But also in that same post, and I think it's related, is that you've now completed your 600th book read in sort of the same amount of time. Well, maybe a different amount of time, but tell our listeners a little bit about reading and how you fit reading in, and maybe the value of reading to you just as a human being and as a writer.
Yeah. So one thing that I haven't probably emphasized enough in some of these posts that I've done is that it's been years, I mean, probably a decade or more since I've actually been with anything remotely close to a TV or movie person. I don't really watch much television or I don't go to the movies. And the reason I mention that is because it was nothing I actually had to give up. It was not like I'm going to make this sacrifice and give up TV in order to have more time to read or anything. It's just something I wasn't doing anyway. So I always enjoyed reading more anyway. And I always like having a book. One of the things that I discovered, I was a few years ago, and I have blog posts out there. I mean, where I was like, I don't know how people can listen to audiobooks. I would never, I like having that own voice in my head. I could never do that. And then pressed for time, 2 years ago, I decided, okay, I'm going to give it a try. And I basically haven't looked back since. And it's been one of my biggest time savers is the ability to listen to an audiobook and do other things at the same time. The only exercise I get during the day is I walk a couple times a day. It ends up being around between 5 and 7 miles a day. But during the time I'm walking, I'm listening to an audiobook. This morning, I had 4 bathrooms to clean in the house, which would be a total drag unless I get to listen to an audiobook at the same time. So one real big win for me is the audiobook and being able to multitask with it. But it also turns out that I was completely wrong. I love them. I love the narrators. I love the dimension that it adds to the book. So it's one of those things where, you know, you have a strong opinion about it and you say, I'm never going to do this. And then you try it and you're like, boy, what an idiot I was.
So a couple takeaways on that. Number one, if you want Jamie to clean your bathroom, all you need to do is give him an audiobook. Number two, Jamie, were you on the audiobook podcast that we did over on SF Signal?
No, I missed it. Was supposed to be, and I forget why I had to back out, but I was looking forward to that one.
So it's interesting because Sarah Chorn, and we all know Sarah, and we love Sarah, and she is so prolific when it comes to just reading. I mean, she did over 200 books last year, and she had a bias against audiobooks. And after that podcast, she is now ravenously consuming audiobooks because it's like the same thing. And like you know, it's like, no, I'm not really into it, you know, and it's weird and this and that. And then we kind of talked to her a little bit about it. And we said, sometimes it's just the narrator. You have to find the good narrators. And when you do, it makes it a lot easier to go through those audiobooks. It's like, I'm on the credit plan now with Audible. I get a credit every month and I get a new audiobook.
Yeah, I also think it's helped with my writing. I mean, hearing this stuff out loud, and you know, a lot of reading for me, learning how to write was reading a lot. You know, you read a lot and you kind of see how it's done, and there's definitely a difference in how I think about it when I hear it versus when I read it on the page.
Yeah.
And I will say I'm reading a book and I'm actually listening to it, and people, I've had this argument with people, well, is listening the same as reading? I use the term reading as shorthand simply because if you say I'm listening to a book, you end up in this whole discussion about books, audiobooks, whatever, as opposed to the book itself. But when I do listen, I think something about listening, and maybe it's that some people have more of an ear for language as opposed to seeing it on the page or something, but something about it, I get a better feel for my own writing since I've been listening to books.
And you're talking about, you know, how many days in a row that you've been writing?
I've written, as of today, 601 days in a row, but actually the larger streak is 743 out of the last 745 days.
Well, see, that reminds me of like the magic spreadsheet. Have you ever heard of the magic spreadsheet?
I do. Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Several people have pointed it out to me, you know, when, as my streak got bigger and bigger, and it's great. It really is. I mean, it's really, you got to find what works for you. And one thing that I've learned over, you know, 20 something years of doing this is, I always look to sort of role models for examples of how to do it. So I've always been a big Isaac Asimov fan, and I used to read his 3-volume autobiography, every April I probably read it 17 times. And it's sort of like almost like a how to become a prolific writer.
Would you say that was like a foundation?
It was like a foundation. Yes. And you see that and you think, okay, I'm going to do it that way. Or, you know, back when I was in college, just starting out with writing, I was a big Piers Anthony fan, and I'd read his author's notes and stuff, say, okay, I'm going to do it that way. That's how I'm going to do it. And you pick and choose these things, and you want them to work for you, but they rarely work for you. But 2 years ago, I read Stephen King's On Writing, and
that's a good one.
And his process worked for me. I've been using that process ever since. I write a first draft. I've never really been much of a plotter, but I write a first draft. And then I do nobody ever sees the first draft. And I do a second draft once I know the story. The second draft, first draft is for me. The second draft is for an audience, and it's a complete rewrite. It's always a complete rewrite. And finding the process that works for you is a big part. And I wish I'd found my process 20 years ago, as opposed to it taking 20 years to find. But you know, you just take what you can get.
That's super interesting, because John and I just had this conversation at Capricorn, because so you found something that works for you. I have found Rachel Aaron's 2K to 10K, and that has really been working for me, to the point where I actually built Scrivener templates to basically support the way she does it. And I take the parts of what she does that works for me, and I incorporate that into my little Scrivener template, and I just fill in the blanks, you know, on how to build the story, because I am not a plotter either, but she's the first person who's explained plotting to me in such a way that it makes sense. And so I actually am doing it now on a lot of stories. And so, like, my critique group's going, wow, you're giving us an awful lot of short stories all of a sudden. What's going on with you? Yeah, it's like, oh, yeah, I found this thing. And John, sitting there at the table at Capricorn, Mary Robinette said something that finally clicked with him, and he's like, you're the first person who's ever explained this to me. What was that, John? What did she explain to you that made you go, that's what I needed?
Oh, well, I asked because I'm interested in doing some writing now, and I've been working on it a little bit, and I had tweeted and Facebooked out, like, being a musician, I had said, you know, if you're a musician, how you learn how to be a musician is you practice scales, and you practice arpeggios, and you practice etudes and studies. And there's it's not like you just one day wake up and go, I'm going to record a brilliant album. There's a very long, but very somewhat clear process to developing your skills as a musician. And anytime I would sort of being interested in writing again, I been asking people, like, well, what are the scales of being a writer? And everyone that I sort of associate with online would just be like, you just sit and do it. You know, you just sit down and do it. And that wasn't a very satisfying answer. And Mary Robinette broke it down where she was like, all right, yes, you practice certain skills. Like, so you practice description by sitting in a room and for 30 minutes describing everything in the room. And don't get up until that 30 minutes is up, and don't stop writing. And so that's an exercise I've been doing every day. We had also talked about, like, learning guitar riffs or guitar solos off of albums, and of doing it by ear. And in the process of doing that, you don't exactly learn it perfectly, but you learn it, and it sort of filters into your own kind of style or musicianship, and you sort of internalize music that way. So she also suggested transcription, like just taking novels that you like or writers that you like and just literally looking at the book and writing it. And I've been doing that too. And I'm finding both of those things to be very helpful.
And John,
I'm sorry.
No, I just gonna say it is actually very simple to wake up one day and write a hit song. You just have to rip off Tom Petty and Jeff Lynne or Marvin Gaye.
Oh boy. It's true. It's very true. But it's, it's getting me to focus on being a student for now, because I think what happens with writing is I would sort of get interested in doing it and I would do it for a little bit and I'd be like, I'm terrible at this. Like, I have no business doing this. I'm 41 years old. I've never done this before. I'm not good at it. I don't have a story idea. Like, why am I doing this? And if you just focus, for me, at least at the stage that I'm at, if you just focus on being a student and doing exercises and nothing more than like, I'm going to try to develop these skills and not look at it past that, it's a much, I think, healthier place to be rather than like, I'm going to write this brilliant novel and I'm awesome. And it's like, well, no, it's like, for me, that would not work at all. And I don't know if I'll ever get to the point where I even try to write something publishable. At the moment right now, I'm just sort of interested in learning how to be a better writer. And even if I get nothing else, then maybe just improving writing skills for blogging or for life. We live in a world where being able to write, you know, communicate through the written word is more important than ever. Just because half of our life is email and Facebook and tweets and blogs and things like that. So being able to, you know, communicate clearly through the written word is a very important skill to have. So if I do nothing else but just improve my communication skills, it will be worth it, I think. But unfortunately, we are running out of time. So Jamie, so once again, your website is jamierubin.net.
Yep.
And your Twitter is @JamieTR. And I highly recommend that you follow him on Twitter and also subscribe to his blog if you're interested in any of this. We didn't even get into any of like the Evernote stuff. Evernote's an application to use, but we don't have time to get into that now.
So I do want to throw out there, so I'm using Evernote at work, Jamie. And it's working okay for me, except for the search function doesn't work. But it's funny, I tried to install it on my MacBook Pro at home, and I haven't updated my OS, and so it won't work. I'm actually afraid to update my OS, because my MacBook Pro is kind of old, and I'm afraid of what's going to happen if I do, and if it doesn't work, and if it gets really slow, and so I haven't done it yet. And so because of that, I can't put Evernote on there. So.
Well, you could probably use the web version.
I probably could, but I don't like the web version.
The web version is pretty good, actually. In some ways, I kind of like the web version better than the client.
I'm 9 times out of 10, I'm not a fan of the web version versus the desktop client.
I'm tend to be the opposite, but I've been really liking their sort of simplified web version. In fact, I have on one side of my screen whenever I do a podcast or an interview or something, I have notes, and it's always in the web version of Evernote. Even though I have the thick client on the computer, I much prefer looking at it in the web version. So,
gotcha. All right. Well, John, we are out of time. Jamie, is there anything else you'd like to tell people before we let you go?
No, I just thank you guys for having me on. This was a lot of fun.
No problem. And as we, you know, we want to let you know that we do support our guests. And so go Mets.
Good luck with that.
Yeah.
Go Cubs. Cubbies.
So let me hear you. Good and loud. All right, Gary. A one. A two. A three. Take me out to the
All right. So Patrick, what do you have going on this week? Do you want to let people know about anything?
It's all the usual stuff. I've taken some time off from podcasting because of my voice and because of being sick. But I just did 2 interviews for SF Signal that'll go live here very soon. So go check those out on the SF Signal podcast. ATF&B, Kirkus Reviews, all the usual stuff. I will be at Pikes Peak Writers at the end of April. So if you're a writer interested in learning about how to write, you know, come to Pikes Peak Writers.
Cool. And you can check us out at functionalnerds.com and look at our backlog of episodes, or go to iTunes and look at our backlog episodes if this is the first time you're listening to the show. We've had a lot of people on over the past 6 or so years or however long it's been. And if you like listening to interviews like this and conversations like this, go and check it out. I'm also doing book recommendation emails and posts these days. So every like 2-3 weeks or so, I'm sort of sending emails about books that I've been reading. So if you'd like to get some of those book recommendations, go to functionalnerds.com, and in the sidebar you'll see a little sign up form for that, so you can sign up and get that in your inbox. So there you go. All right, everybody, have a great week, and we will see you next time.
Thanks, Mo.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.